from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Carissa Hendricks.
Yay! Carissa's back, as has been the demand of many fans for a few weeks now. And despite the fact that me and her had actually recorded a show, that show never went up, to Carissa's great disappointment. And it took me a little bit more coaxing to get her back now, because she was like, you didn't use the last show. And I'm like, I have a fucking standard of quality. It didn't, had less to do with you and more to do with me. Because we both know I do most of the talking anyways.
That's very true.
So if I was dissatisfied, it was probably because of me.
Well, we were talking about a subject on that show that we were both very frustrated about. And it didn't come out well.
No, I don't like shows that are based only in frustration. I think people who listen to the show have a certain appreciation for my rants. But, you know, it can't be all that. It just sounds like an angry tirade, and somebody's like, do you have any joy left in your life? And I'd like to think that I have at least some joy.
Yeah, the rants have to be playful, not condescending, mean, and frustrated.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what that show was, so apologies for having wasted your time, Carissa. But today on the show, we're going to have it's going to be a very interesting show, because we're going to talk about, number one, a fan letter that I received, and we're going to be talking about something that they're into called the paleo diet, which we were doing a little bit of research on, and I want to talk about it because it will segue into a topic that I've been wanting to talk about for a little while, and it's something I call adult fails, okay? This is when you do something where you're like, oh man, I was so not an adult on this one, you know, like failure to book an appointment that's important, or failure to have paid a bill on time. These are the kinds of things where every time they happen, you're like, oh, I hope nobody knows about this, especially my parents. So if that's the thought you have when you have one of those moments, they're called adult fails. I'm going to detail my adult failures and what I think that says about me, but also what I think that says about society. Carissa has optionally to tell him, us about some of her adult failures, but I'm not forcing her hand here. She can remain as secretive as she wants.
I am the golden child. I have no adult fails.
Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
We're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit.
We are way getting your hair. So before we start, I want to mention that if you hear throughout the podcast the odd grunt from me, that's just because I've gone back to the gym and I'm in a lot of pain. So don't be surprised if you hear some odd noises. That's what I'm saying. So, I'm in pain.
It's hilarious pain.
Mm.
It's old man pain. You're kind of hunched over.
Yeah. Like, whenever I drop something, the most embarrassing thing is trying to bend over to pick it up. Where you're like, It is a preview in my life. Yeah. 40 years from now.
Imagine that you're bending over in a way where you're trying not to rip tissue paper pants. That's exactly how Jacob bends over. It's like really slow and delicate, very careful, legs really wide apart.
But you know what's the weird thing about workout pain? It's that it feels bad, but at the same time, it kind of feels good. It feels good because it reminds you that your body is growing in a good way. You know, not as in expanding, but really as in contracting, tightening, all the things that, I like those words. I don't like expanding. Not a word that I like. If I say expanding waistline, do you think positive? I certainly don't. Hmm. I certainly don't. There's a couple of things I want to also mention before we start the show. One of them was the same fan who sent a letter concerning what basically became half of last show, which was a fan in Indonesia who must remain anonymous because, you know, you can't be a non-believer over there. You don't have that option on your census, in fact. But he wanted to, you know, he wrote back and he mentioned, well, you said that Asians are yellow, but around here they're more brown. And here's what I want to clarify something in reference to racist statements about color. They're never really the color that you talk about. Think about this. Is a black person really black? Hmm. How many black people have you ever met that are actually black?
Actually, a few.
Couple. Not a lot. A couple which were really dark, so dark you're like, you know, when they smile, it almost seems like that's all you're the reverse of a Cheshire cat. But you know what I mean? Like, for the most part, black guys are really brown.
Yeah.
And white guy's not really white. We're more pinkish, I guess. I don't know. I'm pink brown. You're whitey pink.
Yeah,
but you're extremely pale.
I'm blush.
You're pretty pale. So when I say that Asians are yellow, it's in that browny, it's hard to describe what kind of brown that is, but that's more of a yellow brown. So yes, I'll admit, they're not actually yellow. Just like I'm not white and most black people aren't black. But this is how racist people talk. And that's how I want to keep with the funny, so I'll keep with the racist. So that's my first correction. Second correction is I realized a couple of shows ago, I mentioned some insane number that was way off. I said there was something in Germany every year. I mentioned, I think, 500 deaths due to honor killings, and that number was way off. I was way off. But I was drunk at the time. The number is closer to 40, by the way, if anybody's still being bugged about that one. So
that's
it's a bit
way off.
Yeah, that's a substantial amount off, I'll admit.
Foot and mouth disorder.
Yes, but however, you know, the one thing about honor killings is if the difference is 40 and 500, to you that sounds like a lot. To me, I'm like, one is too many.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
So those are my corrections. You only get to hear them on the bonus show. The only place where I'll admit that I'm wrong.
That's funny.
But you pay money to admit that I'm wrong. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Isn't that fair? Before we start our first segment, which is on this this kind of rather unique diet that a fan is on, I wanted to read their letter because part of the reason I actually bothered to check out their site and do more research is because they made specific reference to the fact that they listened to the last show where I said that it's important for a person to establish these standards of success, you know, measures of success. So I think that he responded really well to what I said. So his letter said, "Listening to your latest episode on having passion for what you produce was really resonant with me. My wife and I run a medium-sized blog ourselves at paleoparents.com. He says, by the way, you will likely find the paleo diet interesting even if you would not be convinced. It's based on the idea that humans are best adapted for the diet of our Paleolithic ancestors. We're an up-and-coming in the community and find ourselves checking our stats obsessively and working on it all the time. Lately, due to our signing a book contract, we've used up all of our free time on writing and doing blog stuff to the exclusion of nearly everything else. And his wife apparently works full-time on top of it. We're doing this all for $0, which is the typical blogger salary. But it's all worth it in the end because we feel like we're having an influence, small as it is, in the world. Nothing is more rewarding than working with your best friend on something exciting and new, and knowing that people out there care about your point of view." So,
that is
a very sweet thing. And
what an endearing email.
I know, that was an endearing email. So I decided to check out their stuff and actually check out the paleo diet, and even by the end of it, give them a little bit of advice. At least, sort of I'm being a dick, and I'm just going to be critical for 5 seconds. But I hope that my advice is somewhat constructive, because who wants to have advice that's nothing but suck at your dick, right? That's not advice.
No.
That's encouragement. Yeah. And if you want encouragement, I can give you that. If you want advice, I can give you that better.
Yeah. In showbiz, there's always these great stories about, you know, somebody meeting one of their idols or getting a chance to do some work with, like, a really famous musician or entertainer or actor, and it's always like, yeah, I sat down with them and they told this really unfunny joke and everybody laughed and I didn't know what to do with myself. Yeah, that's not helpful. Those people become deluded. So we're not going to delude anybody. We're going to offer genuine feedback, but it's going to hurt a little.
It's going to hurt a little. Okay, well, first I want people to know a little bit about the Paleolithic diet that they do. Because the first thing is, obviously, it kind of intrigued me with the premise that, you know, it bases itself on this on evolutionary psychology, or evolutionary biology, if you will.
Right.
And I've been kind of reading a lot of books on both those subjects, evolutionary psychology and biology. And while I find that it is an interesting field of study, I also find it's very new, and there isn't a lot of empirical kind of data. It's a lot of it is conjecture, right? Where you see what we are like now, you make assumptions about how we were in the past, and then, you know, because of those assumptions, you make a lot of hypotheses that may or may not be wrong, may or may not be right. So The first part says that the dietary regime of the Paleolithic diet is specific to a kind of caveman diet. So this is the period of time between 2.5 million years and 10,000 years ago, which is when we became an agrarian society, or species, really. The argument is that they think that 10,000 years is too little time in order for our bodies to have properly adapted to some of the foods that we eat. Now, there is some evidence to suggest that that's true. I mean, anecdotally, this is not evidence, but anecdotally, I can tell you that both my sister and my brother-in-law have very common disease. One is colitis, and the other one is Crohn's disease. And these are diseases that we see a lot in our population nowadays. They effectively make it so that you can't digest food very well. You know, your colon has these polypses on them, which mean that you can't actually, like, they stop being able to absorb the food. Now, you can imagine the danger of no longer being able to absorb food, right? And these diseases also carry these other side effects. Like, for instance, my sister cannot handle gluten. If she has any gluten whatsoever, so that's from wheat, oats, or any of those things, anything that's sticky, you'll notice that's probably a gluten. So that's pasta, that includes that as well. So there's a huge limitation on the kind of foods that she can eat. But at the same time, I mean, I see that as part of like a bit of our heritage, if you want, a bit of a past of our lives as, you know, evolved animals that didn't necessarily eat meat, that didn't necessarily eat wheat. My cousin has a rare disease called PKU. I should have probably told you what that abbreviation means. I'll put it in the notes. But essentially, what she cannot digest any meat proteins or most forms of proteins, even from plants. She has to weigh all of her food. And that comes from a dormant or an otherwise recessive gene that I think the gene itself is over 500,000 years old. And this is before we started really eating meat. So there's an interesting element, you know, when you consider that fact, you're like, well, all of what we eat now, our diet, is partly influenced by how we've evolved now, but it's also influenced by all of these past, like the interaction between our fucking genes and the way we used to eat food, you know, how we were before still plays a fucking part in how we are now. And once in a while, it might manifest itself in different ways. So, in that sense, I feel like if a person's saying, well, I want to take a scientific approach to diet, I think there probably is a large segment of diet that is very engineered per person. My sister has a specific diet. She's worked at it for years. She knows what it is. It works for her. She doesn't need to take medication for her Crohn's. She just needs to eat the right way. And I would tell you that's probably a substantial portion of the population that needs to really control the kinds of food that they eat because some don't agree with them and they don't even know it. You know, they're suffering from health fucking side effects of shit that they don't even know they shouldn't eat. So that's where I feel like the people who wrote the letter probably came from, right? They came from a position where they were overweight, they were obviously not eating well, and they found this diet and they found it very appealing, and you could tell from visiting their website that they have a kind of attraction to the scientific method. They like it, you know, you're like, science works, bitches, I think one of the shirts.
Well, he's wearing a t-shirt that says science, it works, bitches.
That's right. So
and
clearly,
I want that shirt.
So clearly, they have a you know, a sort of a affiliation with science, and I think that perhaps that's what they consider the diet to be. Now, with that said, now it's time for us to be on the downer side and tell you why this, like many other diets, is one of those. Well, so the first problem with the Paleolithic diet, if you just think about it in a logical sense, is, well, what is the diet of our Paleolithic ancestors? What did they eat? And there's a lot of debate even within paleo diets of what percentage of meat to, you know, gathered foods, if you want. Some vary wildly from 65% meat intake, which is...
That's nuts.
Which is nuts. I mean, it's pretty much the Atkins diet. Because they also have an emphasis on no potatoes, so no starches, and they also have an emphasis on no high glycemic index foods. That's like white breads and white pastas and things like that. And for sure, let me tell you something. When you cut those foods from your diet, I don't care what the fuck you eat, you will lose weight. The honest truth is a significant portion of your fucking fat on your body comes from probably three different foods that you don't even know are bad for you that you're constantly eating.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, not only that, but, I mean, my mom is a little bit overweight, and she spent almost my entire life that I was living there going through different diets. And what I noticed that was that she lost a lot of weight from diets like that simply out of boredom. Mm. Because when all you can eat is meat and vegetables, it takes a long time to cook your meal, so you can't snack. When you take out snacking, most people will lose weight from just not snacking. So I think that's a big portion of why you would lose weight from a diet like that. After reading their blog, I mean, there's two things that I think are wrong with this. Not that they're wrong. I mean, clearly they're losing weight.
Well, good, we also don't know the specifics of their paleo
exactly.
diet.
Exactly. We couldn't find somewhere on their site where they specifically described it. They just sort of pointed to books. And weirdly enough, books that had seemingly very different degrees of what they considered a paleolithic diet. But what I found interesting was, like, they're coming from a place of anecdotal evidence where they both lost weight. And mm-hmm. I think that just comes from them having a lot of discipline and being willing to put a lot of focus on what they eat. And it sounds like they're very active people as well. And then
active now.
Yeah, exactly. So it's anecdotal, but then it's also confirmation bias, you know, where it's well, it worked for me. It works.
Right.
Well, that's, I mean, personally, one thing we should say is that Jacob and I have sort of cut out a lot of meat in our diet recently. Just as sort of, just to see what it would be
like. It's like the reverse paleo diet.
Exactly, exactly. Just to kind of see what it would be like. And I've actually, I think, how long have I gone without eating almost any meat? A couple of weeks, and then it's been almost 2 months.
Well, it depends. I mean, you got really tired of chicken in the Dominican Republic, and even beef, which is a staple of where you come from, Calgary, Alberta. It was something that I just didn't see you eat a lot of. So once you cut out those two bad boys.
Yeah.
I mean, you're left with what? Some pork? You were never a big fan of pork anyways, were you?
No. So I've been eating mostly just fish. But what I found
fish and bacon, though.
Yeah, fish and bacon.
That's the only pork you'll eat. Bacon.
I don't eat a lot of bacon.
You don't eat a lot of bacon.
I don't.
But could you cut bacon out altogether?
I would. That'd be very sad.
It would be a sad
thing. So I'm not claiming to be a vegetarian, but the other thing I'm saying is that just because, personally, I've experienced better mood, more higher energy levels, and sleeping a lot more consistently, I wouldn't for any reason think that that means that everybody's body would work that way. You know, if these people can lose weight on eating very high protein diets, well, good for them, you know? But I think that we just need to realize that everybody's body's different, and what you should be doing probably is trying to isolate different things that you're eating and see how they affect you.
Well, the tough thing about these kinds of diets, too, is the reason why high-protein diets are effective is that not only are you more likely to absorb a substantial amount of the protein into your body without producing waste, so that means you're not producing a lot of poo. There's a wonderful book, I'm going to put it in the notes, that I want everybody to read. It's called Packing for Mars. It's by Mary Roach, and it talks about astronauts going into space, and there's a section about trying to send food up. And they try to deal with the problem of pooing in space, because this is just it's a bad problem, okay? Trust me. I'm not going to go into details about just how awful the technology exists for extracting feces from a human being in a space station, but it's such that once in a while you've got floaties. Yeah, just around. And by the time you've landed your spaceship, there's like a snow of your own skin around. It's just gross. Human beings are gross. But my general point is that a lot of the astronauts, before they go to space, decide to constipate themselves on purpose. They don't want to go take a shit. And if they do go up in space, if they have a really high protein diet, they won't need to go to the bathroom as much because of the absorption rate of really high quality proteins. I'm not talking shitty gristle here. I'm talking like grade A meat that you're eating. You will go to the bathroom less because it gets absorbed better. But with that, essentially, since it takes as much energy to absorb protein as it is, as it gives, if you have a high protein diet, then in a sense you're kind of starving yourself because you don't get a lot of energy from protein. You get it mostly from sugars and fats. So if you cut out those sugars and fats, then yeah, you will lose weight. But you'll also start to suffer from a problem called ketosis, which is something that a lot of people on Atkins diet used to suffer from. Because rapid weight loss, when you're starving yourself, quote-unquote, by eating protein, means that a lot of toxins are stored in your fat cells. And when those start to go away, then your blood toxicity level increases. And that kind of, you know, can make you sick. It can lead to liver issues and so on and so forth. I'm not saying that these people have this problem anyways. And
no, they seem really healthy.
They seem healthy. And you know what? I'm glad that they found something that works for them. One of the things that I liked about their position on food, I mean, forget about the diet itself, right? Because we all recognize that however our diet is today, it constantly changes because our taste changes. But one of the things that I liked was watching a video of theirs in their video log, and they had this one thing where the rules with their kids was you had to try the food. You didn't have to finish it. You didn't even have to eat it, but you had to try it. Because their opinion was, well, your tastes change over time. And, you know, I never really understood that until I started really enjoying asparagus and Brussels sprouts. Two fucking foods I avoided so hard as a kid. I'm like, this is gross, I hate it. But now put, like, Brussels sprouts in front of me and watch them disappear.
Or
seriously.
Asparagus, for sure.
Or asparagus.
You know what I don't understand? I can't imagine there was any food you didn't like, because your mother's, what, like a world-class chef?
Yeah, but everybody says that about their mom, though. You know, it's like,
but your mom
my mom's
is
a good cook. I know, but you try to tell someone saying, yeah, my mom's a good cook, and everyone's like, yeah, my mom's a good cook, too. No.
I just feel like, you know, if I was six and your mom cooked Brussels sprouts for me, I'd be like, tastes like chicken.
Yeah, but you obviously understand that she didn't have that skill level.
Oh, okay.
When I was that age, I mean, her skill level has continued to improve.
All right.
It, actually, when it started out when we were kids, my mom's cooking was so bad that the dog wouldn't eat it. It was that awful. Like,
good thing this is a bonus show.
What? Oh, no, my mom is actually, she would love to share these stories because, you know what, I think that there's one of the things that we fear in our society, in our culture, in Western society, we fear failure. I mean, we fear it so much that, you know, there are places where they'll play baseball games and no one loses. Because the idea of failure seems almost like, I'm afraid I'm going to damage my child if I make him fail. What we don't understand is that failure is the most important part of learning, right? Anybody who does, you know, any challenging task will tell you that unless you fall, you know, the metaphorical fall, 1,000 fucking times, you're not going to know how to stand properly.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this fundamental fear of failure, which just translates into everything else we fucking do, all right? I think just to tie the tangent here to our cooking and how my mom would view her cooking, but I think all of our cooking is that people hate cooking because they hate making anything that tastes like shit. Well, guess what? Even the fucking best chefs, their first stuff sucked, and it just has to. Anybody who starts being awesome at stuff, you'll notice they have the same problem. Did you remember anyone in your class that was like a protege in something? Let me ask you, do you think that those early protégés are still doing what they were good at when they were young? No fucking way. Zero way, because they started off with an advantage. They started off being really good at it naturally, and that's the worst thing that could ever happen to you, because you didn't deserve the fucking skill, and you take it for granted, and you don't care about it.
Mm.
And then you know how everybody else is around you when they realize that you don't care about it, but they would fucking kill to have your raw skill because they already have the determination?
I think a lot of those people are still doing it. In fact, most of those people are still doing it just because you get put on a track for it. And you might, I think those people maybe still don't appreciate it or don't enjoy it as much as somebody who would have worked to be there. But I don't agree with you in saying that if you're a prodigy at something growing up, you're not doing that anymore. I don't see that.
Well, I can tell you that statistically speaking, most child prodigies have a very hard time actually becoming successful in the adult world. And it's because once they grow up and they graduate university, they're no longer just prodigies. They're at the same level as everyone else. And there's only so high you can achieve. You can get there faster. And the way that people's brain develop is different. And I think that child prodigies are just people who get there quicker. But because they're so used to things being different for them, that now when they're on the same playing field, they get depressed. They're just, it's almost like if you fast track someone too fast, they don't get to learn all of the really important lessons of getting there. Like, for some weird reason, everyone has to slog it. There is no royal road to education. I think it was Laplace who said that, was it? I think so, yes. It just basically means that it doesn't matter if you're a king or if you're a pauper, it doesn't change the process and the speed of education. And that includes failure, and it includes slowness. God, it takes long to get good at something. A fucking long time. I can't think of anything that I'm good at that that hasn't taken at least 10 years to get good at. At least that. And I mean, my mom, as a great cook, has been doing for how long? Fucking 30 years. Yeah, she'll be good. She could kick my ass any day, but I still plan on, you know, getting that one recipe in. I could just beat the shit out of her. I'm gonna go Asian because she has no idea how to cook Asian food. So I'm gonna fucking destroy her with Asian food. It's gonna be awesome.
Wow, that's a really weird.
Look, it's a master apprentice thing.
I'm gonna
you would
destroy
understand.
My mother.
You wouldn't have wished to some degree to like totally surpass your fucking master in whatever craft that you enjoy doing. Hells yes. That's the nature of human beings. We want to not only win over those that taught us everything, but just bury them. Be like, watch my awesomeness.
Wow.
But it's out of love.
That explains a lot.
Yeah, well, you're like that too, lady. Okay, don't pretend you're not. All right, let's move on. I don't want to focus too long on this whole Paleolithic diet.
Well, we should sort of wrap it up.
Yeah, let's wrap it up. Let's wrap it up.
We're not shitting on you.
No, absolutely not. Because like I
you
said,
guys
I mean,
rock.
There's lots of different versions. I don't know what your version is, but I think that
and I
if,
think you guys should write that out. Actually, I would love to see what your version is. What do you guys think? What percentage of meats does Steph is working?
Yeah, well, that's the part. That's our criticizing point. Number one, I like the idea of video logs that you guys have, but keep it short. If you have points that you want to make, people on the internet have an attention span of maybe 30 seconds on a video. I swear to you, it's not more than that. Podcasts are a bit different because of the way that it's absorbed and consumed, right? People who listen to these kinds of shows, they do it while they're doing the laundry, while they're fucking driving or exercising. But you can't really do that with a video, and there's a huge amount of competition. So my suggestion would be keep... You can make multiple videos about different sections, but you got to keep it simple. You got to keep it digestible so that people can share it. So that's my first piece of advice. And the second one is make your version of the paleo diet clear. It's not clear right now. I just see everybody else's version. And because, like we said before, it's a ton of versions ranging from a lot of pseudoscience to some potential real science, but here's the thing, and you guys can do this as well. You have that opportunity. Anyone can do science. If you really want this thing to have a lot of credibility, then you've got to figure out a way to prove more than just anecdotally, but find ways to prove that this diet is better than the alternative. And you might be surprised. Maybe it's easy ways to really do that. But the most important thing is that don't make the assumption that whatever you're doing is what's working. That's a fallacy. Keep that in mind. You know, you know that there are certain things that, you know, you might be right about. Like, for instance, I think that one of them, the woman's realization that she could not eat dairy products. That's an important realization. It has nothing to do with any diet. It's just that human beings need to kind of take a fucking long analysis of everything you eat. If the next day you're like, my stomach hurt, okay, stop, pause everything. It's time to note what you ate and figure out that maybe those taquitos are not for you.
Everybody's different. You have to work towards your own biology. My other recommendations for your website would be beautiful, but really hard to navigate. When I get to your blog, I am not sure what to read first.
It's kind of hard to navigate.
Yeah, it's really hard to... I just wanted one page that told me what you guys were about, and I found I had to read a lot of blog entries before I got a good idea. And I think you guys are doing something really awesome, and if your site was maybe a little bit better organized for first-time people... That would be a little bit easier. It looks like you guys are writing for people who've been following you for a long time, and those of us trying to jump in the middle feel a little bit neglected.
Yeah, and the one thing, too, they were talking about is, like, I feel like I'm drowning in all these blog posts that we write that doesn't go anywhere. And the truth of the matter is you gotta observe how much time you spend blogging and how much that's worth.
Well,
it might not be worth the 2,000 words that you're writing that takes you 3.5 hours.
I think their blog posts are pretty concise.
I know, but I'm a 3-4 paragraph dude.
Yeah.
You start exceeding that, and all of a sudden I start glossing over.
I also think you guys could get away with doing fewer posts but keeping them a little better organized. And also, what's the girl's name? I forget.
Oh, please don't ask me. I'm so terrible with names.
Anyway. She did an article about her parenting style. She does a lot of that kind of stuff. And if you're a parent, she did one called are unsmothered kids, and that was just an enjoyable read. She's a good writer. It was really cute, and you know, and she talks about being non-pretentious. Like, they make their own baby food. She carries her baby on a satchel instead of doing, you know, that whole pushing your baby away from
that, which you already like, because you
which
hate
I
those
like.
Gigantic fucking baby carriages.
I just hate that they're in my way all the time. I'm like, hey, I'm glad that your vagina gave forth a child.
You
stop
know what? Breeders are annoying. That's all you
space.
Want. That's what you want to say. Breeders are annoying. Say
I, it. I'm no, but what I liked about this article was that it was non-pretentious. Like, I right. read a lot of this parenting stuff where it's like, I make my own baby food and I'm special. And with the way she writes is like, I make my own baby food and it makes me feel good about myself. But that doesn't diminish anybody else's parenting, and I really appreciated that perspective. And then she talks about Lai Lai Chi League stuff as well, so breastfeeding stuff, and yeah, it's good. The parenting stuff is really interesting.
Yeah, there'll be a link in the notes, by the way, if you want to check out these guys' sites. It's paleoparents.com. So they're a fan of the show, and apparently we inspire them to partially, I'm not saying entirely, but partially, to keep doing what they're doing.
Are they bonus episode listeners? Will they even know we talked about them?
No idea. But if they're not, I'll send them the show for free.
I think
free.
You should.
All right, here's the thing. Here's the main topic I wanted to talk about today. This is a little bit, I don't want to say.
Indulgent?
Yes, it is indulgent, but everyone will forgive me because it's the bonus show. But I wanted to talk about something, again, like I said, for adult failures. And I think about this every once in a while. I'm thinking about it right now because I'm in a position where I'm trying to expand my enterprise. And the one thing I'm running into, the one problem I'm having about that, is that I'm a terrible employee. And there's many things about myself that I've generally failed to transition from a kind of pseudo-adolescence into adulthood. And I want to share with you a list of all of those failures, because I bet you there's a shitload of you listening out there that have the exact same failures. And I'm actually going to also, I mean, not that I want to justify these failures, but being me, yes, I will justify them and talk about them in a larger context of what that might mean for other people just like me, because I don't think I'm special, but I know that a lot of people are suffering through a lot of the same problems. And the world that we're growing up in and becoming adults in is different from that of our parents. So what lessons do we need to learn? What's the fucking future? But first, I want to talk about my failures. Now, those of you who have been listening to the show for a while will remember a very special episode in which I talked about my worst grades. This was my graduating year, and the irony of all of those failures was that every single one of them had something to do with what I'm doing for a living now.
It was like failed computer studies and failed writing.
Yeah, failed English, failed computer science, and you know, just those two things alone already I'm like, how do you have a blog? Anyways, so let's talk about my first and most arduous fail, which is what actually the reason why I wanted to talk about the paleo diet, which is my inability to properly control my diet. This is the first fucking failure. And this is not a huge failure in the same way that I think a lot of people have the failure, because I'm actually a good cook. I should have no fucking problems feeding myself, because I'm not a person who burns water, you know what I mean? Like, when he's boiling it.
That would be me.
That would be you. That would be Carissa. But to some extent, I found, at least more when I was a single guy, it was actually harder to feed myself when I was single. And I think part of it is just I didn't really care about what I ate. And the convenience of today's society, where I can pick up a ramen noodle here, a fucking you know, Chef Boyardee there, something in a can here, then a lot of the impetus to try to eat better disappears, because you're lost in a sea of convenience.
Mm-hmm.
And you've lived here in Montreal for a little while now. You understand the degree of convenience of everything.
Oh yeah, dépanneur on every single
corner. And trust me, these dépanneurs sell not only chips and snacks and beer and cigarettes, but actually carries with it the convenience food that I'm referring to.
Well, and I also think that one of the worst parts maybe about living in Montreal, again, I haven't been here all that long, but how many times has it been 11:30 and I go, I want some chips? And it's in, I put my headphones on, I can walk out the front door, and in one song, I can go there, buy it, and come back and have it in my face.
Yeah.
It's not good.
It is insane. So the first part of the failure, not that I want to blame anyone, is that we live in a convenient society. We live in a society in which I can package you calories in a bag, and I can feed a human being. In fact, I can feed that human being so well that they may not even be able to see their own penises after only a few months of my diet. So, you know, the reality is that we've managed to effectively package high quantities of calories, mostly through fats and sugars. You know, fructose coming from corn products, and oils coming from a variety of, like, nut products or plants or whatever that we just inject and everything. Now you have the kind... You could effectively have, in a tiny bar form, the same thing that people who have expeditions in Antarctica eat. People who burn through 9,000 calories a day, and you at your measly 2,000 consuming the same fucking food, as a matter of fact. And it is infinitely more convenient than you having to do all kinds of complicated things. Like, number one, learn how to feed yourself.
Yep, how to cook.
How to cook. Number one, that's hard. Yeah, how to. That's another thing, too, because you can cook food. Well, you can cook matter that you put in your mouth. But the point where the matter becomes food is the same thing where a splatter of paint becomes artwork. Intentionality here, folks. Did you intend to make it taste the way that you did? Because most of the time, if you don't have any control over taste, it will taste bad. Like, throw a whole bunch of random ingredients together, I bet you it's going to suck.
Yeah.
It's like a tornado of flavor is not a good thing.
Well, I find that when I used to cook, I would try and keep it simple. Because if I put too many ingredients into a pot, it would always end up tasting like gray. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, well, that's what I was saying. It's meh. Like you can't... The weird thing, I think that cooking is a little bit like the way that certain systems create order. Like, you're trying to take a flavor, if you want, and you want to flavor something enough that certain types of flavors come out. So, if I make tomato and I put in some basil, I have... The basil itself will bring out certain qualities in the tomato. Same if I use thyme with a tomato. Different qualities, same basic ingredient. So, the crushed plants that we put on our food has a significant impact on its fucking flavor. And it's not necessarily a well-understood thing. And it is probably one of the most important, because you need to eat every day, dude. Every fucking day you are constantly stuffing your body because it is an energy whore. There are few organisms, in fact, that are as energy whorish as you and me.
And you know what I think the other thing we forget about when we eat is that what you drink is also related to what you eat.
True.
Because when I, over the summer and a couple of other times, I've been really, really active, really trying to work on some circus stuff, and I've had to really pay attention to my diet. And I found that when I take out colas and juices...
Oh, man. Those things.
Holy smokes.
It's fat in a glass.
You forget that that's food. And beer. That's all food.
Yeah. It's super calorie food. Do you know what makes... Do you know what makes beer, like, have alcohol? It's sugar. Without sugar, the yeast can't ferment whatever it is that you're trying to ferment. And there's no alcohol, so it's all sugar.
Okay, so let me understand this. So your inability to properly control your diet, do you mean, you know, construct a diet that is conducive to good energy levels?
Well, let's consider this. Let's consider this. If I had kids, all right, and they were on the same eating plan that I was on, they would either be dead, grossly obese, or suffer from some kind of medical ailment. Like, it's all over the place. I have an iron stomach, which is probably what saves me, but I don't really have any routine, any kind of semblance of a routine when it comes to eating. And that's a huge problem. That's where you go from really young adult to being a bit more grown up about the things that you eat. And you'll notice that once you actually make that transition, some normal things will happen. Number one, you will stop actually gaining weight. I'm not saying you're going to lose it, but I'm saying that you're going to be sort of like, no further Gandalf moment here. You will stop that shit. And that is the first failure that I have. Luckily, I think that now that we're doing the whole meat reductionist thing, you and I, Carissa, it forces you to try to be a little bit more imaginative. And it's kind of hard to get fat off vegetables. quite
No, that's not true.
No, it's no.
If
well,
we stick
sure,
to breads and pastas, we will.
I only mentioned vegetables.
Oh, okay, I see.
I'm saying if you're making a vegetable heavy diet, then it is quite hard for you to gain. In fact, the problem with vegetable heavy diets is that it's mostly fiber. So while you have great poos, you may not be having a lot of energy, which can be a problem in itself. Like fucking balance. That's what I mean more by an adult fail, is that my diet is imbalanced.
Well, not only that, but I mean, how much research have you... And I'm not shitting on you, because I don't do a lot of research either, but you're the research king, right?
Right.
You're constantly online, Googling or IMDBing some nonsense.
Yeah.
How much, out of all that time, out of those millions of hours of Googling,
yeah,
have you actually thought, hey, you know, what am I supposed to be putting into my body to make it function correctly?
The research part is not the worst thing, because I've actually done quite a bit of research. Here's my problem. All the food that I should be eating, I find tastes disgusting. Good example. If we did continue to eat pasta, we should only eat whole wheat pasta. But I can't stand the stuff. It's disgusting. I feel like I'm eating grass. Awful. I just, you know, I love rich white flour pasta. I mean, I more than love it. You know how much pasta I make, right?
So much pasta.
I mean, how often do I make you garlic spaghettis, which is probably the worst thing that I could possibly make, the both of us.
But it doesn't have to be whole wheat pasta. I mean, you could make something like zucchini pasta, or you can make it out of other stuff.
I know, I hate zucchini, though. And I hate squash, and I hate so many other vegetables. It's tough. It's tough, but that's part of trying to be an adult. Accepting that I need to modify my tastes, because I don't want to be a 350-pound fat balding dude. I'll take the balding, but not the fattening. No further. Okay, number two. Failure to pay overdue bills and get finances in order. Now, I bet you this is probably the big one for most people. And I mean, paying bills on time, where if you were really disciplined about that stuff, those tiny little charges that you get, you know, oh, you were slightly late, so here's a $5 charge here. Here's a $2 charge there. You were really careless about taking money out of the bank. Here's $2.50 that we fucking deduct from your account. Being bled to death by irresponsibility, by just the convenience of where money can be made available. That's horrible. We are just bad with money instinctually, because the system that we live in has tried to exploit convenience, but in so doing, taxes us endlessly. I mean, the new reality is that if a bank really is allowed to charge you a dollar per bullshit transaction, a transaction that may have cost you only a dollar, you realize that you're not making a lot of smart choices about how you're moving your money around. That's pretty fucking foolish. But it's hard to do, right? What is the incentive? What is the clear fucking reward you're going to get from being organized, from being an adult? Well, I can tell you the esoteric. You're going to be slightly richer. Oh, that feels good. Why can't I have it now? You see, here's the other problem why it's hard being adult. Because we've been used our whole life to instant gratification. And none of the things that I'm about to fucking describe to you in my list of five bad failures have the ability to give you instant gratification. They're not instant. In fact, it's quite the opposite. So I think my failure is, number one, I'm a lazy human being, but I have, like most of the human beings, difficult time setting the right types of priorities. My priorities are usually on the short term, because I feel that's probably the safest bet. It's like, I don't know if I'll live in 30 years, but I know I'll be alive in 15 minutes, so I want a party. Woo! That's not too wise.
I think most people can say that they have that problem. I mean, here's the other thing with the whole overdue bills and finances in order. How many of us think of the money on our credit card as our money and not backup,
borrowed
safety,
money.
Borrowed money.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Money that has consequences of being slowly dinged month after month, forever. I think that's part of the problem we have. You know what? And I think part of it comes from our generation, and maybe I'm talking into my ass. So if I'm talking into my ass, I'm really sorry to everybody. But
well,
I'm not, I think that we have a sense of entitlement. We are entitled. How many times, and I do it all the time, how many times do you eat something or buy something or do something because you deserve it? You know what? That's
what
not
does that
a
mean?
Thing.
It's
that's
not,
not,
yeah,
a thing.
It's not a thing.
That's a marketing gimmick that has made it okay and guilt-free for you to purchase things that you don't have the money for or to do things that you don't have the time for.
Yeah, well, we are in a sense a kind of entitlement generation.
Yep.
And it's also quite funny that that concept might actually be one of the most destructive ideas that we've decided to adopt without any historical precedence. Here's not to go too off topic, but I last podcast I was talking about Waiting for Superman, and I made specific reference to tenure of teachers in school boards, and I had a person who sort of like messaged back, like, "Yeah, I didn't do any research, and it's like the exception of people who did that. And do you want to take people's benefits away?" Number one, check this out, guys. If you feel like I made a mistake, which I fully admit that once in a while, or probably fairly often, I do, put a link that proves your argument. Don't go around telling anyone that their argument is weak without having an argument yourself. Destroying an argument is not an argument. So that's the first thing. The second thing, once I tried to school him a little and say, like, why don't you check out these articles of what I've read, and be like, you're right, I made a mistake when I said that it was 2 years. In many places, it's 3 years where teachers have tenure. And
which is still ridiculous.
And the thing that I was trying to say is, like, look, when the person who responded was asking me, do you think that we should take teachers' benefits away, I felt like he didn't really understand what I had tried to say. I said that I think it's time for us to renegotiate those kinds of contracts, because I feel like inside even our modern union contracts, there is a sense of entitlement. Like this idea that I should never be in a position where I might lose my job, for instance, that I need job security. And you know what? Job security is a kind, this is a new idea that doesn't really exist. There was, I would say, like back in the feudal system in Europe, there was a kind of job security. Like if you were a serf, you could be guaranteed a job if you were willing to just sacrifice your labor to it, and that could have been viewed as a type of security, but only because, say, the opportunity existed. Now, that's not a great opportunity, by the way, to be a serf. That kind of sucks. I've been always the opinion that I feel like we need a society where opportunity is available rather than security. Because I think we make bad decisions when we feel like the position that we have are secure, like completely secured. I think that in that circumstance, we take... There is no accountability. Like, a person decides, regardless of what I do, I'm not at fault. I'm protected. And let me ask you this question. Is there any industry in which you would want that to be true? Specifically the people who teach your kids. It's like, no, I don't. And it's not to say that I decided that every teacher shouldn't have health benefits or any of these other things. I'm like, first of all, guy, health benefits should not be given by your company, because I don't think that corporations should be in the business of doing that. And the reason, by the way, why your country's doing so poorly is because a lot of companies which have offered health benefits, because they don't have the option of doing this with other people, they're forced to give it, and that's really expensive. So the topic of teachers, union rights, all those things, I'm not suggesting that I want to just rip them up. All I was suggesting is the fact that we just need to have systems that don't encourage lack of accountability.
Okay, and what does this story sound like? Hey, the things you want are unreasonable, but I want them anyway. That seems a little immature. Like, that's basically what that conversation was. It's not reasonable for you guys to ask for tenure after 3 years. That shouldn't exist. No. It's not fair.
Any kind of tenure is very suspicious in my mind. I believe that tenure is a poisonous idea. Like, I don't actually think that there's any need for tenure.
Well, I mean, you haven't really done enough research to truly be able to say that. I mean, well,
look at tenure in universities, okay? Tenure in universities is a problem, too, where a teacher will put in most effort to try to gain tenure, and then they coast. Then they don't produce anything of fucking value, and what's the university supposed to do with this lame-ass teacher who worked hard for a while and now is coasting? I don't like that either. That's not a system that fucking, you know, makes me feel as though everyone's going to get the best out of this guy. Look, again, I'm not suggesting that we fucking tear up all contracts and say, well, if we don't like your performance, you're out on the street. Whoa, I never said that. And I actually think that there is a, you know, like, the teachers in many respects, at least for what they do, are severely underpaid. But bad teachers are, yeah,
underpaid.
Good teachers. But bad teachers who get paid is unacceptable to me, like, on every level. every fucking level.
This I'm just saying we're getting off topic.
Yeah, we were getting off topic, but we can go back to my failures. Let's talk about my third failure.
You fail at eating.
I fail at eating.
The basic need to feed yourself. You fail at the basic finances. Yeah,
finances. I mean, I coast by, but I pretty much fail at that. Okay, number three, failure to transition to proper business structure. This is the business end of Good Atheist. This is a part where I've really struggled because I think that I'm kind of one of those iconoclasts. Like, this idyllic dreamer who thinks, oh, I can just use my own innovation and the sweat of my brow, and then I can just collect all of the funds for... That's stupid. Like, I have done too little research about my own rights, about, you know, how to really use the system to your advantage when you are a business person. I've done none of that. And if I get fucked over because of the lack of that, it's my fault. Like, no one will be to blame except for me. And that's an adult failure because, I mean, imagine this, guys. Imagine that I have just totally fucked up. I owe an insane amount of money to the government, and all of a sudden it's like, I have to quit this to start a regular job to pay off my bills. That would be a huge failure. I'm not suggesting that's going to happen. But that would be a huge goddamn lack of adultness on my part. Something that I would have failed at that, you know, who am I going to blame? So this is one of those things. I'm trying to fix this, by the way. So don't think, like, the clock is ticking. No. I'm fixing this. I'm recognizing those parts. What you're hearing now is a kind of, I don't know, catharsis, where I realize that if I fix some of these failures, the future will be bright. But if I don't, it's going to be dark. It's going to be poverty the rest of your life. It's going to be just, you know, circling around the toilet bowl, trying not to drown.
I'm going
to
be honest right now. I kind of feel more like your therapist than a co-host. It's like, these are all the things I'm having difficulties with.
Yeah, but...
It's also the chairs we're sitting in.
No.
This is a therapist chair.
You're not a therapist.
No, I'm just saying. I'm not saying I'm qualified.
Do you have any failures, or are you going to wait until I say all mine?
Yeah, I don't want to say my failures.
Okay, fine. Number four.
I will.
Number four, poor information on the law and how it applies to myself. So that means I'm not really quite aware of what my legal rights are as a citizen. And I think a lot of people out there who think they know, because I've met these people and I've lived with these people, those people who think they know are actually they're in a worse situation than I am.
Absolutely.
First and foremost. But, that being said, ignorance of the law is never a good defense. So I think it's really in all of our advantage to know precisely the laws and how they apply to us. Like, if you are a comedian, good example, in the UK, and you decide to have a really controversial bits, maybe poking fun at religion, there is a chance that you might be fined. You know, up to $25,000 under some of the existing blasphemy laws in England. Now, that's a pretty serious charge and a lot of money that any person who just decides, I want to start a blog on atheism. Well, if you're a UK citizen, you should be aware that you're not fucking protected. That's really important. Now, how does it apply in Canada? I don't know. I have some vague ideas, but I'm not gonna assume that I know. And my failure to recognize those things is another part of my adult failure. Something that I'm planning again on trying to resolve. But, you know, when you have such a huge list, it takes time.
That's not that huge. It's just really big things.
It's true.
Do you want me to say one of mine? I think you should just finish yours and then...
Okay, number five is failure to properly maintain health, both physical and dental. So what I mean by, first of all, physical is that in the past 7 months, I haven't gained weight. I've actually lost weight, but I've lost muscle mass weight. And I've gained fat. So that's not good. I am fatter and less strong than I was. And part of that is that failure, though, to be fair, is part of the travel vagabond lifestyle. It's a lot harder. When I was here in Montreal with a gym close by, it was always convenient and easy. And it's not that...
No, I wouldn't blame the lifestyle.
I'm not blaming the lifestyle entirely. I'm saying that when you have a bit of the vagabonding, you have to make different decisions about how you're going to motivate yourself to work out. I'm used to routine to make sure that I go often enough and work out often enough that I have some results from it, right?
Right. But you were working out with Carlos in the Dominican.
I was.
It's just that in Calgary you didn't make an effort to set that up for yourself. So that's not about the travel lifestyle. Well, that's about not making an effort.
No, here's the thing. Do you know how many times I got fucking lost in Calgary and we were in the middle of nowhere? You can't just go to a gym nearby in Calgary. You have to fucking take two buses.
No,
you're
I'm
gone
sure there
for
was
45 fucking
around.
Minutes. No way.
Yes.
No way. My point is that Calgary is way too spread out, and if you don't have a car, fuck it.
Did you take 5 seconds to Google that?
I certainly did not.
So then shut your mouth.
I didn't say that it wasn't 100% accurate, but I'm actually willing to put $5 down and bet that I would not have been able to find a gym that would have been within reasonable distance.
Well, we'll never know. We'll never know because
we can still look. We know where the address was. Do you want to put your money where your mouth is? Let's go, baby. $5. Come on. I'm going to put it down on the table.
It should be something different than $5. It should be like dishes for a week or something.
Whoa, $5 in dishes for a week. Is that what you think that's worth? Are you hiring Mexican labor? Like, what the hell?
I get all my stuff made in Taiwan.
Yeah. Well, all right,
let's move on.
Dishes for a day. All right, well, okay. So first of all, the properly maintaining health is essentially just being fit. Now, I know that most people who meet me at first when I say I'm trying to lose weight, they'll look at me and be like, yeah, right. Because I don't look like a fat dude, and I'm not a fat dude. What I mean for me is, like, all my weight is carried in my stomach and chest area, which means that even when I don't gain a lot of weight, I start to have miniature titties if I'm not careful about it. The least attractive thing that any man can have is titties. I'm sorry. Titties are for ladies. Or trannies that are post-op. It's not for guys, all right? The man's ear or the bro... worst invention in the world. You should not have tits. And that's just basic health. If you are healthy enough, you do enough exercise, you may not look like a model, but you will not have little pointy titties. And I think that I would be the kind that would get banana tits. Seriously. Be gross.
Yikes.
Yeah, I know.
Let's make sure that doesn't happen.
Now, the other part of it, and this is actually pretty tough, and I think that... a lot of people have this kind of problem, is that I have not really done a great job at booking dental appointments and making sure that I don't have cavities. The things that my mom took care of me up until I was 18. I've utterly failed to do a good job at this, and I'm 30 fucking 1 years old. So, that is my utter health failure. I'm just waiting for one of my tooth to fucking fall out. I have nightmares about it. And I have nightmares about going to the dentist and saying, hey, I need some work. He x-rays my face, and then he says, you owe me $3,000. That's my ultimate fear.
It'd be more than that, actually. Even if it's just like one filling. Dental work is really expensive.
I know, it's expensive. I mean, most of you guys listening to the show don't realize that I tried, back in 2000, that I had tried to do this whole starting a business for myself, starting a website and a blog really a long time ago. And I quit my job, and my best friend at the time, who also had a stable job, I lent him a whole bunch of money because he's a kind of chicken shit that doesn't want to do anything without at least some safety net. So I offered him a safety net, and his safety net essentially evaporated when he bit on a peanut and his tooth exploded. Oh. And then he found that he had 11 calories and needed 2 crowns.
Cavity.
So the safety monies of that business, whatever it was supposed to be, dissolved instantly in his mouth.
That's probably a big part of where your fear comes from.
It might be. So I have an irrational fear of dentists and how much they would charge
to examine
my mouth.
I definitely understand that. I've tried to go to the dentist once a year, and every time I go... It always seems to align with, you know, my year is very seasonal. So there's certain parts of the year where I make a lot of money, certain parts of the year I don't make a lot of money. So right after the make a lot of money parts, I usually go to the dentist, usually because my partner at the time forces me to go and or drives me there and pretends we're going for ice cream, but then
we're going to Disneyland.
Yeah, exactly. But it always eats way, way into my income because it's really expensive. I mean, I have 2 fillings in my mouth that I got. They're both emergency fillings that were like, oh, I have an abscess tooth, and if I don't get this fixed, I'll, you know, die of blood poisoning.
You know, the last thing I want to say about this whole adult failure thing. And this is kind of like my message to everybody out there. You guys can have a discussion about it in the bonus podcast, or you can send me emails about it, jake@thegoodatheist.net. If you have your own opinions, I'd love to share them on some of the future shows. Here's my question to all of you, and to you, Carissa. Are we a generation of people that haven't quite yet become adults? Are we waiting for something to initiate the change that we need to really kind of functionally take the reins? Like, how many people in our age group, for instance, have the reins of power, the ability to make choices about the world around them without feeling that some old white dude is actually making the decisions for him? Like, are we waiting for this? Are we in a perpetual state of adolescence, do you think?
I don't know. But I think an interesting point would be to say, do you think that if we are, is that in part the fault of a religion that gives us an idyllic heavenly father figure, in most cases, who can lay out rules that are ultimately right or wrong, that we can follow like a guidebook, and we can be given these kind of expectations and then grow up into adulthood and be kind of held back into an adolescent state and not know what to do with ourselves when we realize that the problems that we encounter in the modern world are not answered by these simple, overly simplified guidelines.
Well, what was that? You had a friend who was a former Jehovah's Witness who said that
Mormon.
One of the things, a Mormon,
yeah, yeah.
Excuse me, who said that the thing that she missed most was, what was it?
She was saying how she's, you know, she's happy to be part of this world now, but she feels really overwhelmed by choice.
Right.
She feels that needing to make all these decisions for herself is what she spends all her time stressing out about and working at and making lists about. That part of it is in her opinion, that this is not my opinion, this is what she was saying. I'm not judging. I don't have the perspective. Okay. I'm just saying. But what she was saying was that she doesn't really feel like she has the skills to make these decisions, and it's a lot easier when it was very clear what the expectations were, and it was very clear what she was supposed to do, and her choices were very limited. So it was really easy to go from day to day. When you have a lot of choices, and there's a lot of research behind this as well, when you have a lot of choices,
it's bad. It's worse than having no choices.
You're less happy with the outcome, because if there's a million pairs of jeans out there in the world, and the pair of jeans you bought aren't perfect, well, that's your fault. So you screwed up.
Well, one of the things that I found to be the most interesting about, you know, this generation that we have now is our parents set out with a goal of making us wealthier and more literate than they were, and they've actually failed. And I've been trying to understand why they failed. I don't mean they've failed on an individual basis, but in America, the American dream has failed. America. It has absolutely failed. This generation is less literate and will be poorer than the generation that came before it. And this is one of those weird things that perhaps part of the problem is that our parents really did want us to have ultimate choice. I think we created a culture of that. But at the same time, and this is the one thing, you remember whenever someone says, oh, you know, Christianity is influenced Western society, I said, I agree with you. And the most important way it's influenced us is a culture of unaccountability. Mm. Where if I do something wrong, I steal your bike, I can ask Jesus for forgiveness, and he forgives me. Now, in a society in which you have to deal with other human beings, do you want your forgiveness to hinge on the imaginary friend of some douchebag who wronged you? No, you don't. You want people to be accountable. You want, if someone fucks up, to be fired. Like going back to the teachers, right? The rubber room in New York, where they spend $100 million on bad teachers that they're trying to fire. And then many of them go through like 3 or 4 years where they're just still getting paid full salary and full benefits while they're waiting to be fired, is an example of a lack of accountability. This is my problem here. I'm like, how Western society is quote-unquote crumbling because no one wants to take any fucking blame for it. I mean, we're part of that mechanism too. Like, I have no opportunities and that's my parents' fault. Rah, 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 rah. I'm like, actually, you have too many opportunities. You make bad choices about those opportunities, and then you are worse off and stupider as a fucking result.
And what did we prove today? We proved that not only are we making bad choices, but we're making bad choices when we know very well what we're making bad choices about. It is so easy in our culture for us to go, well, not in our culture, but in the technology age, for us to say, hey, this is a problem, spend 10 minutes figuring out how to fix it and then put that into action, but we still don't.
No. Well, what we feel to some degree, again, this is part of the lack of accountability. Somebody else is going to fucking take care of it.
Jesus will fix it.
Jesus will fix it. Obama will fix it. Yep. I mean, there's lots of people that are just waiting on someone else to just figure it all out for them. And here's the part of us where we really have to understand, like, what is being an adult in the 21st century? Because it is a question that no one else has ever had to fucking answer, and we're the ones that have to come up with that answer. I don't know what it is yet. I'll tell you, number one, the answer is definitely not any religion that exists, because it adds to the problem of infantilization. It adds to the problem the same way that your Mormon friend was like, I didn't know how to make good choices. But that's more of a systematic problem of her previous belief system, which didn't teach her how to make decisions. It just told her, you rely on your elders and your priests, and they'll tell you everything you need to know. This makes foolish and unwise human beings. So we know that religion is not the answer. On the other side, too, we have this kind of strange problem where I think that the youth of today feel as though perhaps part of their opportunities and goals in life really are less important than maintaining the health and existence of an older generation. And they may be very angry about this. I think part of the riots in England that happened a couple weeks ago have a lot to do with this. I mean, there was a lot of bullshit about this. It was a good excuse for very violent young people to attack Muslim groups or other minorities and to destroy property. But underneath that, the anger that they were basically drawing from was young people feeling that, like, they have no job opportunities, and the government basically taking all austerity measures away. That's kind of like benefits and things like that, because Europe is crumbling under its safety debt. So there's a loss of opportunity. There's the realization that our taxes, the amount that we have to pay, and the generation of long-lived people on expensive life-saving medicine and machinery has a cost. And now we have an uncertain future. Mm-hmm. Within that is the weird haze of being like, we don't know if there's going to be enough petroleum to sustain what we've been using. Another country is rising, and if China has the same proportion of goods that we have, we would run out of materials in a matter of decades. And of course, the fact that the oceans are slowly dying and species are disappearing. We're left with all of these fucking black clouds hanging over us. And I can't blame anyone for not wanting to transition to adulthood in this scary, hopeless-seeming world where we're always drawn, like, we're, every time you turn on television, someone's trying to make you more afraid. Someone is trying to control your behavior by, like, being, you need to do this. We need to lower taxes. No, we need to increase social benefits. We need to renegotiate union contracts. We need to have more benefits. You're like, all of these different voices vying for your fucking opinion, all of them sounding somewhat legitimate. You don't know what fucking the solution is. You have so many choices, and yet no one can make a fucking decision. And you know what? Why am I still an adolescent of some kind, a kind of pre-adult, maybe is the better word? I think it's just because what do I want adulthood to be for me? What do I want the world to look like? I don't know the answers to these questions. I still feel like I'm in Crystalis, waiting to see what the opportunity to grow is. And until then, I'm just going to remain dormant. I'm going to choose when I'm going to fucking turn into a wonderful butterfly. Until then, pot and video games.
That sounds effective.
That sounds really effective. Sounds
good
really effective.
Good job,
Jake. You really nailed it. Okay, you know what? I think that should cover it for the show. I'd like to thank everybody who's a contributing member. And I want to encourage anyone who's got some great stories or things like that, send us your emails. I'll read them, and they may become topics of conversation. Guess what? The last two shows were all topics that people sent me shit about.
And Wiki, you can consider this episode some of your good atheist homework. Why don't you take some time for yourself and figure out what your own adult failures are, and either write in or leave them in the comments section. That'll help us get more perspective for future shows.
And even if you don't post it, write it for yourself. Like, absolutely. What are your fucking adult failures? Don't think of it as some kind of weird bullshit New Year's resolution where you promise to change all those things, because change is gradual. It is slow, But, you know, it starts really simply. If you feel like, for instance, a good example, like the first failure, my failure to get my diet in order, is something that even one of our fans got their shit together on. They became more adult about that. And however else you feel about their fucking diet, it seems to work for them. They're happier, healthier, and there's not a lot of fucking shit I could talk about that. Because that's more than what I'm doing. That's way more than what I'm doing. Okay, with that, I'd like to thank my special guest, Carissa Hendricks, for joining us on the show. Thank you, Carissa, for gracing us with your presence.
No problem. We'll see if this one actually makes the air.
It's going to go up tomorrow. What are you talking about? All right, with that, my name is Jacob Forjan.
And I'm Carissa Hendricks.
Have a good atheist day, everybody.